Welcome to Get Connected with Nina Del Rio, a weekly conversation about fitness, health, and happenings in our community on 106.7 Light FM.
Good morning, and thanks for listening to Get Connected. While human connection has become even more digital in 2020, personal and professional networks have arguably become more important than ever before as well. How do we build our networks and how do we reap their benefits? In Social Chemistry, Decoding the Patterns of Human Connection, Marissa King reveals how your real-life networks have the power to transform your life. Marissa, thank you for being on the show.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Marissa King is professor of organizational behavior at the Yale School of Management, where she developed and teaches a popular course entitled Managing Strategic Networks. You can actually check your own network that accompanies this book at assessyournetwork.com. But organizational behavior sounds like a lot of strange stuff. For those who don't study networks, can we just start with what is it that you do, Marissa?
I study people and how they interact. And I'm particularly interested in how people interact in groups. So not just what your direct connections with the people closest to you have, but how does it matter whether or not your friends are friends with one another?
And it's not necessarily about having money or having access. It's about how you make personal connections and how you develop them. Your first example in the book is Vernon Jordan.
Yeah, Vernon Jordan is a case of an extraordinary networker, and has built one of the most powerful networks. But he really started out with very little. He was the grandson of a sharecropper and had very little access to what we think of as opportunity and connections. But over the course of his career, as he developed his network, one of the most powerful things he did was becoming really involved in the civil rights movement. And there he really developed a strong set of connections within that community. But then he began to broker between Wall Street and the civil rights movement. And in doing so, he began to broker between groups that normally wouldn't speak together. And we know that that's where creativity and innovation comes from. And ultimately, Vernon Jordan ended up being known as the shortest connection between any two boards on Wall Street. And so his network very much evolved in a way that created benefit not only for himself, but also created a benefit for those around him. And his story is one of, it really shows the power of social connection, but it also in many ways is exemplary of what people oftentimes have hesitancy about being really intentional or purposeful about social connection. So he in many ways became one of the closest confidants of Bill Clinton, and people will sort of question, like, what is his value added? Is he anything but a networker? And both are somewhat true. So I think from a personal level, his story is also interesting. And despite building this extraordinary network, he often will talk about or reflect about feeling lonely or disconnected. And I think it shows the power both of our connections to help other people and catalyze social change. But it also shows the drawbacks of not being intentional and about making sure that our networks have what we need for social and emotional support.
He would be, I believe, what you would call an expansionist. Those are the people who could work a room. But again, as you say, they don't necessarily have the deepest of connections.
Yes. So that network size of having an extraordinarily large set of social connections, it creates power. It creates influence. But the downside is if we have lots of social connections, just because no matter who you are, you have a fixed amount of time, it means that most of your connections actually aren't deep. And that lack of depth is what I think makes him talk about actually feeling lonely and disconnected. And all of us, no matter if you're a Vernon Jordan or not, are essentially forced to make this choice. Do we want a smaller number of deeper connections, or do we know lots of people but not know them well? And whether we're making that choice consciously or unconsciously, it has profound implications for our mental health and well-being, but also our professional success.
Just to go back a little bit, when you've been studying over the past 15 years, studying social networks, in part you did it by asking people to use wearable sensors to gather data during interactions. What exactly were you tracking? What are we doing physically? How are we interrupting people that makes such a difference?
Yeah, so our networks, we have these three types that most of us fall in, but they don't come out of thin air. They come from our momentary interactions, how we behave in a given minute. For instance, we know that conveners tend to be better listeners. Expansionists tend to mimic body behavior in conversations. And so using wearable sensors, we could understand the effect that interrupting had on the type of network someone had, on the strength of those social connections. And so what's really powerful about the ability to study our networks in that way is our networks really in many ways are shaped by how we interact on a momentary basis. But in turn, the types of relationships that we're embedded in also impact how we interact and are perceived by others.
One of the other main groups are brokers, people who have networks that tend to straddle different areas, and they also tend to be mostly women. Why is that?
Women naturally tend to keep their home lives and their work lives separate, and there are lots of reasons for doing this. And that separation can be really beneficial for many ways, whether or not it's keeping home and work life separate or just spanning different groups that normally wouldn't talk to one another. It creates the opportunity for innovation and creativity. And also importantly, it creates more work-life balance. So women, whether by choice or by circumstance, tend to build networks like this, which are really beneficial on a number of dimensions. The drawback is that they're essentially having to maintain multiple networks. They have to network harder because they essentially have one work network and one home network. So understanding what are those benefits and trade-offs is really important, particularly from a career perspective. We know that brokers are more likely to have higher pay. They're more likely to be promoted at a faster rate. But also in thinking about how can you manage some of the tensions of work-life balance, a brokerage type of approach can be really helpful.
Marissa King is a pioneer in the fields of networks and social relationships. Her work has been featured in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post. Her new book is Social Chemistry, Decoding the Patterns of Human Connection, revealing how your real-life networks have the power to transform your life. So networks in person and social, now we're all distanced because of COVID. How has that impacted our networks?
If we look at particularly what's happened is we've moved on to primarily virtual interactions, our networks have shrunk and the quality of our interactions has diminished. And that's in part because the quality of our social connections are often conveyed in momentary interactions. The extent to which we can truly make eye contact, touch has a profound effect. The ability to listen to one another. And we just simply can't do it as well when we're virtual. And that means that the most basic elements that connect us together as humans have really been impeded during the pandemic. And so one of the most powerful tools that you can think of when you're trying to think about if you feel like you need more social support or you really want to connect with someone is to think about how can you focus your attention more? So actually getting off video and just hearing voice can be extremely powerful. Voice alone conveys far more empathy. It can also feel in many ways as good as a hug in terms of reducing pain. So if we think about what is truly human about how we interact, the more we can get back to that, the better off we're likely to be.
The value of those networks in the first place, those connections, I think most people don't know the vast majority in person of their connections. What's the potential for those networks and how do most people use them? How should they use them?
If we think about our networks, we all have networks. They're just the momentary traces that we have on a day-to-day basis. But the shape that takes, it has profound implications. And if we want to think about how to use them most effectively, we have to understand what are the existing strengths within our networks. So conveners tend to have more emotional and social support. How can you, if you want to be more creative, you need to be able to think like a broker. So perhaps making an unusual career move or joining a group that you wouldn't normally talk to. Those are all ways that you can begin to change your network by changing your behavior.
It's interesting. Brokers are, as you just alluded there, tend to be the most adaptable and flexible, but they're also most likely to be pegged as people who make life difficult. Why is that?
Yeah, when we straddle different groups, we're often seen as the outsider. So brokers in part can do what they do because they're very much like chameleons. So one of the biggest predictors of the type of network you have, and by far the strongest personality predictor, is something called high self-monitoring, which is just how chameleon-like are you? Can you give an impromptu speech about something you know nothing about on the fly? And brokers are really good at that. And because of that adaptability, it's what allows them to do what they do well. But it also makes them kind of suspect because they're in some ways an insider, but in other ways they're an outsider. And so what we know is that for that group in particular, for brokers, they need to be seen as trusted and they need to be seen as empathetic. And that allows them to do what they do so well, bringing people together, but without facing some of the negative reputational fallout.
I'm going to make a guess that brokers might be the one that have networks that overlap the most in class, age, race, religion, even politics, and that perhaps conveners have the tightest social network that often, as you say in the book, leads to groupthink.
That's exactly right. So our networks, we naturally are drawn to people who look like us and think like us. And that principle, which is known as homophily, or the tendency of like to affiliate with like, is really endemic in conveners' networks. And in part, that's because if our networks, if we naturally believe them just to do what they do, our friends tend to become friends with one another, and we start to create echo chambers. And that's one of the consequences of allowing your network just to do what it's going to do. If that happens, most likely you're going to end up with a convening network. And so brokers who want to sort of straddle these different social groups, they have to be much more proactive about continually recreating and regenerating their network. Sometimes that happens because they move around a lot or they change jobs a lot. But also sometimes it happens because they're really interested in learning about different communities in other places in the world. So one of the things to keep in mind is a network left to itself will become a convening network, but brokers actually have to continually work to maintain their network if they want to achieve the benefits of being a broker.
Where do introverts fall in this conversation? How are networks of introverts and extroverts different, or are they?
Yeah, that's been one of the most fascinating findings from the research. People sort of, when you start to talk about this, if you ask them, what do you think is the biggest predictor of what someone's networks look like, they'll usually tell you introversion, extroversion. But what we know is that personality characteristic explains less than 5% of what someone's network looks like. Other factors matter far more. Where you spend your time, right? Do you live on a cul-de-sac or do you live on a through street? How big is your apartment building? What is your office layout? How do you allocate your time? Do you tend to prefer deeper social interactions, or do you actually really enjoy talking to many people? Some of those are choices that we make for ourselves. Some of those are just natural ways that life designations, and some of them are preferences, but all of those have a much bigger impact than introversion and extroversion on the type of network we have.
As we're talking about meeting people and building new contacts, what do older, dormant contacts offer that newer ones might not?
Yeah, especially during this time, if we think about our dormant contacts, so people we may not have seen in 2 to 3 years, they offer many of the benefits of innovation or creativity that we normally get from brokers. So one of the things that people oftentimes, I think, get wrong, essentially, is if they want to think about strengthening their network, they're much more likely to think about how can I meet new people or where can I go? How do I grow my network? But there's extraordinary value that's untapped in your existing network. And much of that relies in dormant ties, someone you may not have seen for 2 or 3 years. Research has found that reaching out to dormant ties, you're more likely to get new ideas, whether that's in new information, whether that's looking for a new job lead or just trying to get feedback on a project that you're working with. Older ties, people that you haven't reached out to, are more likely to provide those information benefits. But the other plus side is trust remains in those relationships. So even if you haven't seen someone, the trust and strength of your tie, it's stays there. So by reaching out to someone you haven't seen, you're more likely to get more creativity, newer information, but also the trust and comfortability that also has its separate emotional benefits is still there.
Marissa King is the author of Social Chemistry, Decoding the Patterns of Human Connection. You can also take the test and find out your own network at assessyournetwork.com. Thanks for joining me on Get Connected.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This has been Get Connected with Nina Del Rio on 106.7 Light FM. The views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of the station. If you missed any part of our show or want to share it, visit our website for downloads and podcasts at 106.7lightfm.com. Thanks for listening.